And so essentially what happens when someone has HA is that their body simply doesn't have the available energy because they are not eating enough and they're exercising too much to support having a cycle and making a baby.
And this was something that I learned too when I was trying to understand what was happening. Because when you go online and you Google period missing, you come up with these results that are like, if you're anorexic, your period can go missing. But that wasn't me. I was never a body fat percentage that could be considered anorexic. So it's not that it has to be that extreme. And that's where I think HA falls into this gray area, because it's not fully, you know, it's not, someone doesn't have to be anorexic to have it.
You're listening to the Imperfect PCOS podcast, where we share no BS, science-backed strategies to put your PCOS into remission. I'm your host, Corey Ruth, aka the Women's Dietitian. Let's get into it.
Hello. Hi, everybody. We are here today joined by Lindsay Lusson, and I am so happy to be able to connect with her finally. We've been IG pals for a long time, and she is such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to getting your period back, hypothalamic amenorrhea, and we're going to go through all the nitty gritty with what this condition is and a lot of the overlap that might be experienced if you have this condition versus something like PCOS. So welcome, Lindsay. Like I said, she's an RD. She specializes in disordered eating and infertility. She has both personal and professional experience with hypothalamic amenorrhea, what we call HA, or period loss related to overexercise and underfueling, undereating. Her experience led her to become passionate about educating and empowering others to advocate for their health and take charge of their fertility through proper nutrition. She's helped over 200 women recover natural cycles. That's amazing. Get pregnant and heal their relationship with food and exercise along the way. So welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for having me. And this is just so fun. Like you said, we've like connected over Instagram for like probably the past 3 years. And so get on like face to face and get to chat about all the things. So thanks for having me.
Yes. What I love about your page in particular is that your passion for helping women with this condition, it shines through so clearly. And it just, I'm always here for it. So thank you so much. I honestly wish that I would have come across your Instagram profile, when was it, in 2012 and 2013, when I went through my first bout of HA, and I really had never heard of it. No doctor had even really, you know, they didn't know what was going on. And we'll talk about that too. But my gosh, what an amazing resource for women to have these days. Like, that's why I love Instagram and I love social media. Obviously, there's pros and cons to it, but it's just amazing. So tell us kind of about how you got into this field. Tell us about your journey. I'd love to start there.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about it. So funny you mentioned like back in 2012, 2014, like those were the years, Corey, that I was struggling with HA as well. Mm. And I had a pretty long history.
So only we would have been friends.
Exactly. Exactly. So the short of it is like kind of towards the end of high school, decided I was, you know, going to take charge of my health, like totally like normal intentions. I was going to start eating healthier. I was going to start exercising. A lot of like girlfriends of mine in high school were doing different diets. And so Weight Watchers at the time seemed to be the one that everyone was like, well, this one is, you know, simple and
good old Dub Dubs.
And so I started, you know, this diet and I started working out. So I made like two pretty major changes. And if you know me, I'm just very type A. Like, it's like I set a goal and like I'm going to achieve the dang goal. Like, there's nothing that's going to stop me.
I'm going to do the damn thing. So,
yes, I was very intense, but again, that's my personality. And so I lost about 15 pounds in 3 months. And like with that went my period. And it kind of went from like being irregular, but when you're like 17, 18 years old, like you don't really think about these things. And so it was kind of like 6 months down the line, went to my doctor. My doctor's like, you know, like a lot of girls your age have irregular cycles, which can be true. Just put me on the
pill. Given that. Yes. That's the go-to. Okay. Got it.
And so went on and kind of like college into grad school was kind of on and off the pill. I was kind of aware that not being on birth control, I didn't get a period. So kind of like, it's like, that doesn't feel right. But was never getting any direction with anything. My kind of obsession with food and exercise eventually did develop into an eating disorder that I did have to see outpatient treatment for. Healed from my eating disorder, but was still like, and I did get my period back like during eating disorder treatment, but then it kind of went back to this like irregular and eventually amenorrhea. So kind of went through like all of the kind of phases that you can go through when someone is developing HA. Mm-hmm. And so basically, at the age of like 27, I was dating my now husband, and we like kind of talked about, you know, if we were to get married, like if we wanted to start a family, and I brought that idea up, and you know, he's always wanted kids, and so it didn't spell with him. So I went to go see a reproductive endocrinologist. I was like 27 on Endeavor, forget this, Corey. And we didn't take insurance. So we paid a lot of money to like do a lot of testing. We tried some supplements, we did some things. And at the end of like probably 3 or 4 months of working with him, he told me, "You're perfectly healthy. You just don't get a period. Come see me again when you're ready to have kids."
You know, that lights my hair on fire. Like I want to, yeah. Anyway. Wow. Yeah.
So then I was just kind of left to be like, okay, like this is my life. Like I'm just going to do fertility treatment whenever I'm ready to get married. And, I eventually in 2016, at the very end of 2016, after I got married, I came across, the term hypovolemic amenorrhea. And I kind of learned like that there was this thing and that this is me. And then kind of through that and a lot of research and just like self-discovery, I was able to change my lifestyle with food and exercise, which is always easier said than done.
Yeah.
I'm pregnant 3 times now,
yes.
3 full pregnancies. And so through that process, I was like, dang, nobody's talking about this. And I kind of started talking about it on social media, being like, if I could help one person not have like the agony of a decade's worth of like disordered eating and just not understanding that I wasn't doing the right things for my body.
Yes.
If I can help one person, then like this is worth it. And it was like, the more I talked about it, the more I was like, oh, wow, this is like not that uncommon.
Yes.
And so, yeah, here we are today.
Oh my gosh. What an amazing journey and a complete like 180 from just being that scared, you know, younger woman. Like, I don't know, it's, there's something off. I don't know what it is. And just being able to now be on the other side and educating women that were, you know, in your shoes where you were one time. That's such an empowering feeling. That's truly amazing. I'm in awe. So cool. So cool. So as we get further and just into this discussion, I really want to just first define what hypothalamic amenorrhea is, because it's a mouthful, first of all, like polycystic ovarian syndrome. So, you know, we shorten it up to HA, but what is that? And how might someone know that maybe they're teetering in this area or they might want to look into this?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll also just say that I think that we're still coming around, like in the medical field, I think that we're still kind of coming around to the terms. There are a lot of people that I've worked with and a lot of physicians that I've visited with, OBGYNs, that are like, like you kind of said.
Yeah.
I think it's still kind of catching on. But essentially, when you have HA, your brain stops communicating with your reproductive organs. And it does that because it is not getting the energy that it needs. So I always like to remind people that it's not like you just lose your period out of nowhere, right? So our body has essential body functions, right? Like your heart pumping blood to vital organs necessary for you to be alive.
Yeah, that's a must do. Yeah.
We got to do that.
Got to do it.
You being able to make a baby is not a essential function for life. And so when your body is not getting enough overall energy from the food that you consume, and potentially from the exercise that you're doing, it starts to shut down not essential body functions like digestion, like making thyroid hormones, like your entire reproductive cycle. And so essentially what happens when someone has HA is that their body simply doesn't have the available energy because they are not eating enough and they're exercising too much to support having a cycle and making a baby.
Okay. That's a perfect description. So it's not that you need to be, and this was something that I learned too when I was trying to understand what was happening. Because when you go online and you Google period missing, and we're not talking about PCOS right now. We'll get to that in a sec, but just period missing, you come up with these results that are like, if you're anorexic, your period can go missing. But that wasn't me. I was never a body fat percentage that could be considered anorexic. So it's not that it has to be that extreme. And that's where I think HA falls into this gray area, because it's not fully, you know,
it's not, someone doesn't have to be anorexic to have it. And someone can have other pre-existing conditions that are going on as well that might be causing period issues too. So.
There's no way around it. PCOS is complex and multifaceted. What we know about it, including how best to treat it, is constantly changing. That's why I've dedicated my life's work to helping women put their PCOS into remission. Inside my signature program, the PCOS Boss Academy, women lose weight permanently without restriction and master their most stubborn PCOS symptoms. If you're looking to get pregnant or want to be a mom in the future, my ultra-successful Get Pregnant with PCOS program supports moms-to-be every step of the way in conquering PCOS symptoms and bringing home the baby of their dreams. Plus, there's an additional weight loss mode to check into. These are all of the science-backed nutrition and lifestyle tweaks you need to improve your PCOS and change your life from a qualified healthcare provider and leading PCOS expert in the field. Ultimately, we are in control of our PCOS, and I would love to work with you inside one of my upcoming programs so you can step into the best version of yourself and start feeling like you again.
Yeah. Okay. So how do you get diagnosed with this? Like, how would you be, how would you go to the doctor? Like, what are some tests that are run? Or is it more just kind of like looking at the symptoms and saying, okay, here's what I need to do?
Yeah. Yeah. So a little bit of both, actually. Yeah. So okay. If somebody's been missing their period for longer than 3 months, and I know you told me this probably with PCOS too, right?
Yeah.
Go to your doctor. Like, go to your doctor. That's the first line of defense. We need to have some tests done. I like to see a full panel of kind of like your reproductive hormones. So like your estrogen, your progesterone, your FSH, LH. I also like to see free testosterone or DHEA because we might want to consider PCOS, right? Like, so just gathering as much evidence as we can. So we always want to start with lab tests. Now, the tricky thing, and I know we'll get more into this too, but the tricky thing with HA is it's a diagnosis of exclusion. And so we're trying to rule out PCOS. We're trying to rule out pituitary tumor. We're trying to rule out primary ovarian insufficiency. We're trying to rule out thyroid dysfunction. We're trying to rule out a lot of things. And then it's like, if all of those things check out, that's on it. Well, then we're talking about HA. And I think it's kind of backwards in the way that we diagnose, because I think that if we could have like I really want to like develop this screening tool. This is like on my ongoing to-do list, this list of like 15 questions that a physician asks a woman coming in with no period, like, can we like add HA into the mix? Because I think that if we could have some simple screening questions around lifestyle, we could come up with a diagnosis quicker. But at this time, at this day and age, we're ruling everything out and then landing on HA. There are some, there is some research suggesting that a better way to diagnose would be if someone is amenorrhea, so no period for 3 months or longer, again, no PCOS, no POI, estrogen's less than 50, FSH is less than 10, and LH is less than 10, then we're looking more at HA. So that's maybe something that can have that's a little bit more tangible if they are getting their lab results done and they're kind of looking for something a little more concrete.
Yeah, good. And I was gonna ask about the estrogen piece because, you know, we do see that sometimes lower in women who are under fueling and, you know, overdoing it in the fitness, category, which is why, you know, we see this a lot with, you know, young female athletes who, you know, it's kind of a normalized thing. They're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna period. That's not normal. And, you know, you're the doctor that, you know, Lindsay, you initially saw that didn't have a problem with you not having a period. That's a problem because we need to be shedding that lining on a, you know, at least on a semi-regular basis, you know, to prevent other issues. So love it. Okay. So let's talk about the kind of the difference between HA and PCOS. And I'm happy to chime in here too. You know, if someone is kind of looking into both, what are some of the differences that they might find?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's like more like textbook versions of HA, just like there's more like textbook versions, if you will, like, if right. So like some are going to, in some ways, jump off of a page at you and you're like, all right, this is definitely it. And then there's always going to be people in the gray area, but like, I would say textbook HA is hormones are low, right? So we talked about estrogen being less than 50, you know, like I'm looking at labs of people, I see 5, I see 10, I see 25, right?
Okay.
Whereas I think, right, with PCOS, estrogen's usually a little bit higher.
Yeah, typically estrogen is not our problem. It's not that we over or under, we have more issues with adrenals and androgens. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I'd say that would be one way to tell.
Okay. Estrogen.
Another
okay.
thing too is with textbook HA, your hypothalamus mm-hmm. is suppressed, right? So the communication between the brain and your ovaries, it's not happening.
Okay.
GnRH is not releasing LH and FSH. So those values are also going to be super low. So we always think about hormones are low. And like I said, if hypothalamus is suppressed, there's no communication at all going on. LH and FSH are going to be low. We're not going to see I know there's a certain ratio with PCOS that we're kind of looking mm-hmm. for, right, with this too.
Right. Yeah. Double. And you know, something else too with PCOS is if you have symptoms of those elevated androgens. So if you are considering both diagnoses and you have facial hair, body hair growth, really bad acne, that could be potentially more on the PCOS side than the HA side. What about this weight piece? Because it's interesting because in PCOS, when we're looking at the research, when warranted, we know that potentially for a lot of women with PCOS, my light's flickering on, I'm like, my power. We know that a lot of women with PCOS, when weight loss is warranted, when they do lose just even 5 to 10% of their body weight, we can see ovulation become restored and a reduction of a lot of these facial hair, kind of issues. On the other side, with HA, when we actually see sometimes improvement when weight is gained, right? When they're pushed into that. And I'm just going to say the B word, the BMI, when we see mm-hmm. BMI, climbing up more towards that air quotes normal range, we do see, sometimes that period come back, right? So it's interesting because we're kind of on the polar opposite. So would you say generally somebody with HA is going to be in a smaller body size, and would that kind of make sense here? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, good question. So yes and no.
Okay.
HA, it is not uncommon to see kind of a low normal BMI. So we're not necessarily an individual who's underweight, but their BMI would be 19 or 20, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
The bigger issue with HA isn't body size, it's uh-huh. the underfueling. So let's say that somebody, I don't know if you ever talk about set point and weight or just kind of our bodies in place. Yeah.
Right.
So let's say somebody has a genetic set point weight range of their BMI being 23, 24. Mm-hmm. And then they go through a very intense restrictive time with food and exercise, and they bring their BMI down to 21, 22.
Okay.
Weight change and the means that someone went to achieve that weight change is really the bigger issue. So I have definitely worked with individuals who have, kind of midpoint BMIs or even kind of higher on the BMI scale. And again, because of the history and the weight loss stress that's been on the body, mm-hmm. It can occur in individuals who are not necessarily in air quotes smaller bodies.
Okay. So that's good to know. So, weight is potentially a factor, but it's definitely not the end all be all. And I say that all the time with PCOS, but just to clarify with HA, when I went through that experience, I was in between college and grad school, and I was on this health kick, and I actually started a vegan, low fat vegan diet, thinking that that was the healthy thing, right? That completely destroyed everything for me hormone-wise, because I was also adding onto it an exercise routine that I'd never really been active before. So mm-hmm. it was this perfect storm. Granted, I also have PCOS, so I'm prone to completely irregular. I'm with PCOS, there's people who can go a long time without a period. And then we have my bleeders who just bleed all the time, random spotting all the time. I'm on the second category. So I was used to just all the time. So then when I went through this HA bout, it was 8 months, I think, without any bleeding. And that was really weird for me. And I was like, okay, something's up. But again, it was interesting because I was, reading all these things about, anorexia. And I'm like, I don't think that's me. My body mm-hmm. likes to be probably at around BMI 22, 23, mm-hmm. even maybe 21. And I think I was probably closer to 20, which mm-hmm. can be totally normal for one person. But right. for my body, my genetics, just my build, I'm also 5'6". So I'm I'm not short, but I'm not really tall. I'm kind of in the middle. It just wasn't, my body was not happy with that. So it's something to consider, you know, our bodies have a place where they're happy weight-wise and they like to be. And if you're on, you know, either end, you know, whether it's bigger or smaller, your body might not be really happy with you and your hormones are going to respond accordingly. So I think it's really important to kind of, you know, clarify that a bit. Another thing that I have seen is women who go through hypothalamic amenorrhea, they get their period back and then they think, I've done it. And they go back to what they were doing to get that initial diagnosis. So they go back to the crazy exercise routine. They go back to kind of restrictive dieting kind of thing. So, you know, I wanted to just to touch on that because HA, there, it's not like a final destination and you're air quotes cured, right? Just like PCOS, it's an ongoing process to maintain our period health. So with that being said, what would you say are some diet and exercise, like air quotes, do's and don'ts? I'm not going to go into that like black and white mentality, but just generally, like what are some do's and don'ts if someone's facing HA and they want to get their period back? Maybe they want to get pregnant, whether now or in the near future, or maybe not. They just want to get their period back and get their hormones stabilized.
Yeah. Well, and I suspect it's somewhat like this with PCOS, but like the process of getting your period back or regulating your cycle, like the process of doing that is a little bit more structured than once our bodies start getting into that what's that point weight range where they're happier. And so like when I'm telling these things, I just preface it like this is not going to be the rest of your life when I talk about these recommendations. Although there is like a transition period, right? We don't want to go from like doing the things to not doing the things.
Yes.
And we lose our period again. But so the process of recovering your period is to reduce exercise. So we want to reduce both the duration and the intensity. So intensity is super important. People hate hearing this, but it's the day truth. High intensity exercise. So, you know, running, high intensity interval training, CrossFit, heavy weightlifting, like pretty much if you have HA, these are going to be the things that you consider to be exercise and the things that you don't want to do, right? Like the gentle yoga class and the stroll around the neighborhood, like those things, it's easy for women with HA to say, oh, well, that doesn't count. That's not really exercise. Well, unfortunately, those are the things that you need to do to get your period back. So
got it. We're dropping the hard truths here, guys.
I mean, it is what it is.
I'm here for it. I wish that I would have been just like screamed at like this exact conversation when I was like, no.
Yeah. Well, and it's a frustrating little like, you know, gray area to be in when you feel like you're making changes, but like you aren't making the changes that are going to
actually
be back. So I always like to just be clear with people. So bringing intensity and duration of your exercise way down, like as much as basically you can possibly. And that doesn't mean no exercise at all, but it does mean like what you consider to be exercise may need to be. We just need to take a little vacation from some of that.
Yeah, I like that. A little vacation. And I think it's important to touch on the mood aspect and the stress, because so many of us find exercise like that to be stress reducing and mood boosting. So it's important to, you know, understand too and remind ourselves that other types of exercise, it may not feel like it at first, but other lower intensity types of exercise, like a stroll around the neighborhood, can have those same benefits, y'all. But it might take time to recognize and feel that. So lean into that, take that vacation from those higher intensity exercises.
Yeah. And then with food, it's going to be increasing, right? So increasing your carbohydrates are super important. That's probably the most restrictive food group I see in what that develop HA.
Got it.
So increasing carbs. Again, it's so hard because most people who develop HA get really into nutrition and really into healthy eating.
Yeah.
And maybe even a little bit too much into it. And so recovery might feel like it's going against a lot of like conventional nutrition wisdom. Like when we talk about like, hey, like it's going to be really hard for you to eat more. We might want to chill out on the fiber and like eat some pancakes or tortillas. So like lower fiber foods are going to be easier body to digest. And it's going to be easier for you to eat some of these things. And that doesn't mean like, you know, pancakes, right, and pizza, and Doritos until your period comes back. But it does mean that we might need to just kind of like do a deep dive on reevaluating what we consider to be healthy versus not healthy, and like kind of trying to liberalize our diets and find the gray area in the tiny list of food that we're probably like only allowing ourselves. So increasing just your overall intake. So like calories, carbs, and then in eating more food, you're going to be taking in more nutrients. I think sometimes we get so hung up on like, well, what is the supplement that I'm missing? Or like, what am I deficient? You're probably deficient in a lot of things because you're expending a ton and you're not taking in enough food. So we talk about increasing the amount of food, increasing the variety in your diet. That also typically helps with a lot of the digestive symptoms women are experiencing. And then as you kind of touched on like the stress piece, that's huge too. And like there's nothing wrong with using exercise as a tool for stress management. But I always like to tell people that you need more tools in your tool belt than just exercise to manage all of the crazy stuff that life throws at you.
Totally. What do you do? What are some like stress management? And you, I mean, we'll touch on this later, maybe after the recording, but I'm like with the three littles, I've got two and I'm like, woo, I need more stress reduction outlets here. Like, where are they? What do you personally do? What do you like to recommend to clients?
So like what I do personally or what I recommend for clients?
Well, we can start with what you do personally. And then
I do personally. So first of all, with three littles, I have a lot of help. So I am very blessed that we live in the same city as my parents and then my in-laws, about an hour and a half away. So we get a lot of help, but I'm also like, and you know this, like being an entrepreneur, like let's hire and get some help, right? Like, so
if you delegate,
like sitters. Yes, absolutely. I think setting boundaries with things that stress you out, right? Like whether it's work, whether it's social media, I think that boundary setting is really important. I don't know about you, but like lately having like a 10 to 15 minute just hot shower feels like a day at this point. Like if I can just like I can tell you the difference in my mood if I'm just like, just need a shower. I just need time away and I just need a shower. But like I use like clients to like hot bath, get your candles, your bath bombs and all the things like, pedicures, care, massages, like self-care items, I think are so important. And then I also think like there's so much value in just like being able to vent, right? So whether that means therapy or one of the things I do in my program is I'm really big on community because I think it's important to feel understood. Like other people know how hard this is for me versus like feeling like you're talking to nobody.
Yeah.
And so whether that's, a partner, whether that's a best friend, whether that's a family member, whether you, choose to invest in a community or choose to invest in therapy, I think like having an outlet where you can just process things in your own way is really important.
That's so true. And I love that you touch on the community aspect because it is invaluable to be part of a community with women that are fully understand what you're going through, are right there with you. Because most of us, despite how common these conditions are, HA, PCOS, infertility, when I look at my immediate friend group, and I don't know if you feel this way, I don't have very many close friends who struggle with these things.
Oh yeah.
Even though how common they are, I just don't. So it's so nice to have that community. And that's why I love working in this space and running, my online programs. I'm sure you have the same, but having that community for women is such a great stress release.
It's so important. Like just feeling understood. Because I also think too, like when we talk about having to make like maybe some major lifestyle changes for both the person with HA or PCOS, like it can feel really isolating because the people around you don't have this struggle. They don't have to make these changes. And so you can the whole like, why me? Why do I have to do these things?
Yes, totally. And the people like my mom, we do lots of like walks with like vents, venting sessions. And I, talk to my fiance, they're both wonderfully supportive, but they don't have PCOS. And especially my fiance doesn't even have a uterus. So he has no clue, bless him, but he doesn't get it, even though he tries so hard and I love him for that. He just cannot. And my mom has never struggled with any hormonal issue in her life. So anyway, it's nice to have that community of women. I love that. Cool. What are some like HA myths? What are some hypothalamic amenorrhea myths that you've heard that maybe circulate online or social media that we want to bust today? Because I love doing this.
I love this question. And I think that the biggest one we've kind of already touched upon is that women with HA are like clinically underweight. So they're they have eating disorder. Yeah. And I don't want to say that that's not the case. I will say more often than not, there is some level of disordered eating going on. It doesn't necessarily have to be a full, let's check them into the hospital eating disorder.
What about orthorexia? I wanted to ask you about that before. Do you see lots of overlap with, and we'll define, can you define orthorexia first?
Yeah. You know, interestingly enough, I was on a continuing ed webinar a couple weeks ago. They talked about, they were kind of walking through all the different eating disorders. So orthorexia isn't actually part of the DSM-5. But orthorexia is just kind of this obsession with healthy eating. So that might like, eat super clean, like do not touch, you know, a piece of pizza with a 10-foot pole. Like, and yes, I see that a lot. So again, that's going to kind of fall into disordered eating, not full eating disorder. But you know, there's definitely like, you know, kind of a spectrum of that too, right? There's like, you know, you talked about like being vegan at one point. And I know that like some people that have that diet are very dogmatic about it. And then there's people who are a little bit, you know, a little bit more flexible. So I'll also say too that like, there's always going to be kind of like a personality component to HA, very type A, very driven, very by the book type person.
But sounds about right. Guilty.
But absolutely, someone does not have to have an eating disorder and they do not have to be underweight. So in fact, all the people that I've worked with, 95% of them are all normal weight. Like normal BMI, like they go to the doctor and doctor's like giving them a high five because they appear
super
in reality, there's a lot going on underneath the surface.
Fascinating. Thank you.
Another one would be that you can't get your period back. I was told that a lot of people told that by their doctor, like, you know, like, you know, some people just don't get their period or like, you know, because of the history that you might have, right? Like, the, you know, like you permanently damage your hypothalamus or something.
Just
not true. Like we don't have research to support that and we don't see it in practice, but for some reason that goes around a lot. And then third, probably most common one is, and I hate that this is still like a thing. Like I think back to like my poor, like, you know, 18-year-old self being put on the, there's nothing wrong with like, you know, using birth control, right? But this was the solution that was given to me for my missing period. But like that people are still told, hey, don't worry about it. Just go on the pill. This is, you know, solving all of your issues.
It's regulating our period. Interesting. Yeah. I think that we're starting to see we already have been seeing this shift, right? And like the pushback for just the pill. You know, it's an option and it can certainly be helpful, but it's not the only option. And I love to teach that to clients and love to, you know, preach that to followers on my social media channels. It's such an important thing to know. Here's a question. This might be, and I feel like I might've seen this on your Instagram, but one thing that I always saw, when I was like researching HA was that in order to get your period back, you have to eat 2,500 calories per day minimum. And that came from, that wonderful book, No Period, Now What? And what a great resource that was for me back before Instagram and social media. Do you find that to be true? Is that like the standard? Is that true?
I mean, it's just going to be different for each person. I will say that somebody is like DIYing period recovery. I think that's not a bad place to start, but I think people need to understand that that's probably bare bones for period recovery.
Oh, wow.
So when I'm working with clients, like I usually try to get them away from like numbers and calories because like with these minds, right? Like we kind of get a little obsessive with them.
Yeah.
And more often than not, when I see people engaging in calorie or macro counting for the purpose of trying to get their period back, I see it being a barrier to recovery because they tend to be like, all right, well, if that person needs 2,500 calories, maybe I only need 2,200 calories. Cutting themselves short and they're not really allowing their body to determine the amount of food that it needs, which is what we really focus on in my program. So yes and no, I think it can be a helpful starting place, but what I think listeners really need to understand about that number is that your body may need way more than that. And if you're allowing yourself a little below that or not allowing yourself to go above, that's probably going to hold you back from being able to get your period back, cycle regularly, and get pregnant.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Yeah, that's definitely good to know. And it's, you know, not to say to get trapped in that numbers game again, but good starting place and maybe even higher. Fascinating. What would you tell someone who is listening to this podcast saying, ooh, this is me, and I think I need some help? What would you tell somebody who is in that space, but is afraid? I don't know if that's the right word, but just kind of fearing the process because they could potentially gain weight.
Yeah. I would say that you are not alone. This is the number one fear that a lot of people have. I think that as a society, we're very fat phobic. And so I just want to normalize that fear. Most people have this fear,
right?
And
right.
A bad person to feel this way. It makes you cute. I'll also say too, that this is hard to conceptualize when you're stuck in this space, but you are going to feel better when your body is functioning correctly. So whether that means you gain 5 or 35 pounds, there will come a time where you actually feel better in your body at a higher weight. And it's a process to get there, but you need to understand that if at the end of the day, all of the exercise that you're doing, all of the research that you're doing, and all of the discipline that you have with your diet is about health. If that's what it's about at the end of the day, you need to understand that the healthiest version of you might need to gain weight in order to be healthy.
I love it. Love that. And something that you said struck me, and I want to ask you one follow-up question to that, but personally, I felt like I was more critical of my body and I hated my body more when I was at my lowest body weight. And now I'm like, I'm looking okay. We're good. We're good. So, but I also wonder if age has something to do with that, because I'm in my mid 30s and I went through this in my early 20s when I was at the peak of just all of the influence and the vulnerability, we have when we're younger. Do you see HA happening more commonly in a specific age group?
Mm-hmm. I couldn't necessarily say that it's happening more often in a specific age group. I kind of get, most of the women that I work with are late 20s, early 30s, and they are talking about starting families. But I think that might be a cherry picked part of the population, because I get DMs from teens, I get teens. So younger girls, I get messages. I take a handful of clients in their younger 20s too. I agree with you that there's something really beautiful about aging, in the sense that we as men are able to build some confidence and not care as much about all of the things. So I think that it can get easier in as you age, but I'll also say too, that if somebody's listening and they're 25, I don't want a family for the next 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. And you're I'll just deal with it in the future. Mm-hmm. I think recovery from a mental standpoint is going to be harder for you, because those habits and thought processes are just deeper and deeper and deeper ingrained in you. And so that there's, power in seeking, getting ahead of this, if you will.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And what we see with PCOS is that they take birth control from, age 17 to 32, get off birth control. Oh my gosh, I have no period, or my period, I'm randomly just bleeding all the time. I have X, Y, and Z symptoms. So it's kind of been covering that up. So had they had not been on birth control, they would have said at some point, I need to work on the actual things that are going to help me normalize my cycle, so that when I want to get pregnant, it's not going to be this big infertility battle, right? So I think it's the same with HA. I always say it's never too late and it's never too early to work on hormone health, whether it's HA, PCOS, whatever, thyroid. Okay. Thank you for that. So tell us, Lindsay, anything you're super jazzed on right now when it comes to hormone health, HA, and also, we'll kind of close out with how do you work with clients? How do you work with women in this space?
Yeah. So some things that I'm getting super jazzed and excited about are all of the hormone tracking devices that are coming out, the ones where we were all about the OPKs, which measure LH, more and more devices coming out where you can test your hormones and get just kind of more of an inside look at potentially, right? I think that there's, we take all this information with a grain of salt, but you're getting a little bit of an inside look in your fertility, which, you know, as part of like my whole, you know, kind of mission statement is like empowering women to take charge of their health and their fertility. And so I just love that there are more things that are kind of coming back into like the patient's hands when you go to that doctor's visit and you're told like, everything looks good, like, don't worry about it, or you know, it's normal, but you feel like crap. Like, so I'm loving like all of like the new like fertility devices and things that are coming out that just gives us like more information and like helps us to like hopefully get to know our bodies a little bit better.
Totally. I love that too. It's so amazing to see this world of like femtech, which was pretty much non-existent like back in the day.
But like, and even like 5 or 10 years ago, like even like with actual pregnancy, like I think a lot of this stuff existed, or maybe it was like just being developed.
Yes. Totally. I love that. Cool. And any devices that you recommend, or you know, fertility trackers or anything like that?
You know, it's tricky with HA, right? Because like, I love these things. It's super fun to track like when you have a cycle, when you don't have a cycle. I feel like sometimes investing in some of these tech products can be really frustrating because you're not really seeing the normal ebb and flow of hormones that you should in a typical cycle. So,
yeah, I mean, it's triggering.
I think that if you're really working on recovery, like something like a temp drop could be helpful because it can help you to, you know, have more information about, you know, your body. We talk about women with HA typically have a lowered basal body temperature. So if you start to see your basal body temperature start out in the 96s and then we're rising to the 97s, well, you probably haven't ovulated, but at least we're bringing body systems are turning back on. So that could be
encouraging.
And then, so temp drop I use with clients sometimes. And then the one that I've kind of been trying out myself is Enito. I don't think that that would be one that I would recommend unless you actually have a cycle, because like I'm nursing right now and I'm just playing around with it. And so I don't have a cycle back yet. And every single time I take one, like I put in all the data and it just doesn't go for. So I'm like, well, this sucks. Like, I have information. So have a cycle, that one can be super fun. But like, if you're like on HA, probably not going to give you a whole lot of like insight as to what's going on.
Yeah. But something to, you know, look forward to doing when you do get that cycle back. Cause you will, if you work with Lindsay.
Exactly.
So tell listeners how they can find you and what kind of services you provide. So, you know, if somebody is looking into working with you, how they can find you and all that stuff, all that good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So I offer group coaching, and with the group coaching, there is opportunity to work one-on-one with me. So like if you're wanting a little bit more TLC, so I have an 8-week period group program. I base the program around the average amount of time that it takes my clients to recover their period. So
it's amazing.
8 weeks, ideally, we're hoping to see.
Took me way longer. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. And for some people it can, but like, you know, when you're following something.
I didn't know what I was doing.
Method in a plan. And you've got that community aspect too, right? Because a lot of times people kind of know what they need to be doing, but they don't have anyone holding them accountable. So I offer a group coaching program with the option to like buy up for VIP one-on-one coaching with me as part of that program. And then I also offer like a phase 2 program. So maybe somebody isn't full-blown HA, but maybe their cycles are like 90 days and they're not eating enough and they're running their bodies into the ground. Right. Mm-hmm. So we talk about how to regulate your cycle too. So, we didn't really talk about this yet, Corey, but like, there are kind of like versions of HA. This is an official term, but like you can get your period relatively regularly, but have a short luteal phase, have low progesterone, have low estrogen. Maybe your lining isn't very thick. Maybe your periods are really light. And those are kind of like, again, I'm using air quotes, your lighter version.
No, it's good. It's good to know.
So in my phase 2 program, we focus on regulating your cycle for health and fertility. So figuring out how to get your cycle in kind of that 25 to 35 day range, make sure you're ovulating, make sure that we're making enough progesterone for pregnancy.
Awesome. And do you have to be working on fertility to work with you, or
Okay. Good to know. Yeah. I would say, I know somebody asked me that the other day, I would say probably 60 to 70% of my clients are wanting to get pregnant, but you absolutely don't have to want to get pregnant to be in my programs.
Cool. Yay. That's so awesome. What a great resource. Very cool. So tell listeners where they can find you, like your social media website, all that jazz.
Yeah. So I'm most active on Instagram. So you can find me at food.freedom.fertility. If you just are kind of wanting to learn more about coaching, I have most of the information on my website. So that's www.foodfreedomandfertility.com.
Cool.
Perfect. Okay, great. Thank you so much for being here today and giving us all this great information. This is going to be so helpful for women who are potentially dealing with this condition or might want to look into it further. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right.
If you like this episode, don't forget to review my podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's what keeps me running. Thanks for listening to the Imperfect PCOS Podcast.